Welcome to We Watch Too Much TV, the weekly podcast where two real-life best friends dish on all the TV content they've been binging in their remote work-based lives. Babbling about everything from scripted television to reality TV and film, these two besties will immerse you in their quirky universe of streaming. Here are your hosts, Jocelyn and Tanea.
Guess who's back? It's Caro with the tight beats and the tight flow.
Shout out to Mr. Caro, our high school health teacher.
That was an inside joke. We went to high school together. We had a rapper teacher, and it's the 50-year anniversary of hip-hop.
It's the 50-year anniversary of hip-hop. It is our season 2 finale.
Listen, we're Mr. on Caro video. Will be very proud of us right now.
So we're just going to give you a lot of what we already have, which is just uniqueness, nerve, and talent. Okay.
With our beautiful chocolate faces. Welcome to season 2, episode 10. We watch too much TV. How are you, bestie? How's life?
I'm doing well. You know, we about to be out on a scout.
We have a trip coming up. We'll tell you more maybe soon. You'll see.
Yeah, you'll hear about we're traveling. So we'll be traveling, and I really only got a week off from coming back from Barbados. And living it up. I'm not even going to lie. I was living it up and dancing like it was 2005.
Girl, I love my island friends. You won't see me at no crop over, no sleepover, no done over. I can't do 24/7, 365 of Soca. I need a biggie break. I need some total. I need some something else. But you look like you were having the time of your life.
Yes. For someone who never liked Soca, like I feel like Tanea tolerated Soca more than I did because she grew up in Brooklyn. But let me tell you, baby, you could take a little break when you're in your hotel room and listen to some hip hop. I did that periodically. But for the most part, when you're really in the essence of Carnival, which I strongly encourage everyone, but definitely Black people and definitely Black Americans, to go experience at least one carnival in a Caribbean country. Not on Eastern Parkway in Brooklyn, not in Toronto, not in Miami, not in Boston. Go to, particularly, of course, I suggest Barbados.
Right.
Go to Trinidad. They have one in Antigua. That's the day after Barbados crop over. It's just like you have to immerse yourself in that culture, and I guarantee you, you're going to be listening to Soca the whole damn time. You're going to start to learn the words. It's just going to become a like part of like, because the Soca's lit. I'm not even going to lie. I have been sleeping on Soca for a while, but that Soca, like, it just moves you. And the other thing too, what I realized too, is like, our music is so violent. Like, it's so violent. We're really, they're over there. Granted, a lot of songs might be.
I'm about to say, do you even understand what they're saying in their patois?
They're talking about just having fun. Like, one song that I've been listening to, because I do And 8 Fitness, and they have a soca and reggae mix. And it's literally like, he's acting like the third person of Mr. Rum, the alcohol. And he's just like, I'm tired. I'm about to go out, and Mr. Rum is tempting me. I'm about to go up into this party and give it up and just have fun. And literally most of the songs are about fun and love and dancing, or a girl just dancing
with your butt.
Yeah. Pretty much. But then it's like, you think about what we're listening to over here, and it's like, take that nigga money. Hot hands, ass.
Well, not me. I'm still listening to 90s R&B. So I'm still listening to Faith Evans.
Yeah, 90s R&B.
I'm still listening to like love songs. And
but it was awesome. Like, it's a great environment. It's a great way to even just, because it's liberating. At one point when I was like in the Kadumit, which is like their carnival on Monday, in my costume and stuff, I was just like, this is so liberating. And a girl was just like, isn't it? And we were just had like a little moment, because it's just like really. You sometimes you forget, especially now, because we don't dance no more. Everybody in the club looking around with their phones and all of that. Back in the day, today, we used to dance.
We used to dub. Okay.
Yeah,
we used
to dub. You're supposed to dance, and sometimes you forget how liberating dance is. You just let everything go. Your worries. The biggest one for me was Juve, right? Because the Juve we know about was violent. People would die every year, but that's Brooklyn. This Juve, you get there at 2 in the morning, 2, 3 in the morning, It's in a derby area, like, you know, where horses race. So it's just a circular field. And you're just outside. You literally don't dress in anything cute. You should be wearing your most bummiest clothes. I have my hair tied.
I saw in a plastic bag.
Courtesy of Hilton Barbados. I asked them for a garbage bag, put that right over my head, and still ended up making the recap video. Hot mess. But it's like you're just in this circular thing, and everything is in that. Everything's on a truck. So the first truck is the music. The next truck is a bar. So either side of the truck you're on, and you have your cups because you're with whatever band. We were with Native. Shout out to Native. And so you're like going up to the bartenders like, here, I want rum and coke. I want rum and soda. And as the truck is moving, then the truck after that is paint. Now, what I always suggest Barbados now, because they're classy with their Carnival Juve experience. They water-base their paint, whereas I heard certain other countries don't. Like, they are throwing real
paint. So it was easy to get off your clothes and your shoes. And nothing stuck.
I really didn't even need that plastic bag.
Oh, good.
I really didn't even need the plastic bag because it was just like little pastel water paint. So it's just going to, you wear a white, it's going to like turn your clothes like a cute little pastel color. But it was just so fun. So then now you got your alcohol, you got your paint, and it's literally like one big, giant adult water party. Like, imagine being back in middle school, after school, summertime, and the boys is throwing water balloons and y'all throwing water. But it's like you're adults, so it's like somebody comes and throws paint on you. I'll be like, we're going to get him back. You throw paint back on him. Nobody is trying to check for you, really, like, bagging you wise. Like, it's the culture. So it's like you give a little dub. Move on with your life.
I was going to say, were the men nice and respectful?
Yes. It's honestly, good. America is perverted. And we learned that when we went to Ibiza last year and we was topless and the men are still looking us in our eyes. They didn't care that my titties is just saying hello.
They were looking from the neck.
They were literally looking me in my face when I got my whole titties out. Hello. But it's like our culture here in America is just super, super perverted. But yeah, it was just like so, so, so much fun. And that, even that Juve was like, so once the sun came up by like 6:30 in the morning, the paint is done. You're not throwing paint, but now it turns into like this human car wash. They put us with bubbles, pastel green bubbles came. Then they water hosed us down. Then you go, what do you do after you get a car wash? You go eat. Then we have food. Every party out there is all inclusive. They as for as much rum as they're giving you, there's food.
Good.
And it's just so much fun. So honestly, I would have slept on it as well. Granted, I don't know how many much more carnivals I have left in me, because that should have been something I was doing like 10 years ago.
Unless it is a request from you or a very close friend.
But I will say, like, if you are a party person, if you could have a good time and turn up, it don't matter how old you are, it's gonna capture you. That energy, the liveliness that's there, it's just gonna catch you. And you're, because I was seeing people of all ages really just put it in.
Mm. Well, I know you probably weren't watching TV out there, but you've caught up.
HGTV, I sure did. You know that's my channel.
When you were in your hotel, you was like, TV.
HGTV. I'm at that phase of my life where it's like I can just really binge HGTV. It's literally insane. But once I got back, I caught up on my shows, and there were shows that I was already watching prior to leaving that I was like, oh, we're going to talk about that on the show.
Because we got some shows to watch.
We will let you get into our weekly grab.
Okay, so I'm going to start with one of our favorite shows that just came back. I don't like the new network, but it is a challenge, USA season 2. So I think because it's not like the MTV challenge where it's core MTV people, they're focusing on like Big Brother, Survivor, Amazing Race. So last season was on MTV, this season on CBS, but it's still good, different format. So this season, they have the majority of the players from the Big Brother, Survivor, and Amazing Race. They only bring back 6 challenge vets. They bring back Bananas, who we love, Corey. They bring back Wes. They bring back Amanda, Tori, and Janae. Okay. So they divide everybody into three groups, and each group has to pick one female vet and one male vet. So what I love about this season is the new premise. So they pick the teams. Whoever wins the challenge, that team wins. That team will vote one male and one female into, like, the elimination round. But then the two teams that lost, they do a secret vote. So you can vote for your team member. I could vote for you, or you might bet, and you won't know. It'll just say, Jarrasa got four votes. But you don't know if I'm one of those four. So I love the voting aspect of it. I love the randomness of it. I personally don't like it on CBS. Please bring it back on MTV. MTV would give us 90 minutes. CBS has to fit it into an hour. So I felt like the first episode was a little rushed, but they're giving us two episodes a week, kind of after Big Brother. So they're doing like Thursdays and Sundays, but it's still the challenge. It's still good. These rookies are tired of the vets, but also you wouldn't be here if it wasn't for the vets.
Right.
There's only six. They're like, oh, we got to get them out. We got to get them out. But y'all can't match these vets when it comes to a physical challenge, when it's an elimination. So I'm excited for the new season. I want them to stop hating on Bananas. I think he's great TV. I cannot wait to see him on my TV more often. He knows his job. Happy Corey's back. Corey, his youngest daughter's had some health complications. So he's like, I'm here for money. I don't give a damn about nothing else.
He's always there for his team.
He's there for his kids. And I really see that, like, these rookies are trying to play a challenge game, but they really can't. So I'm excited to see what vets make it to the end, because it's only six of them. The rookies think they know, but I really feel like the season is going to surprise us. Really good. If you want something to watch.
So does it come on Paramount Plus?
It does, because Paramount, well, Viacom owns CBS, Paramount, and MTV. So it will be on Paramount Plus if you do have a subscription. I canceled mine after Drag Race. So
I did, but they got me like, oh, we'll give you 2 months for free. So
if you want to catch it up, just season two, the challenge, but they call it USA because I think they're trying to make it global and do like worldwide, UK, Australia. But it's still our same challenge. I just want CBS to give me 90-minute episodes because I'm spoiled by MTV.
Right. I will check it out since I still got Paramount Plus because they wouldn't let me cancel.
You sure? Give me two more weeks.
Right. Okay. I got you. I was like, all right, 2 months. And trust me, I won't forget.
No, I have a reminder.
I'm still waiting for the return of my show Evil. They playing. I feel like they purposely trying to stretch it out too.
Is it scripted or reality?
Scripted.
If they haven't filmed it, you know the writer's strike is still going on.
No, they did film it. Okay. It was already supposed to air. Like, typically the season starts in like July. So I'm like, why are you guys dragging it out? Like, give it to us.
I've heard because they don't have a lot of content. Because they only have reality TV and whatever was filmed because of the strike.
Give us our show. We don't got time for all of this wait and dilly-dally.
They're supposed to be meeting this. I'm very invested in the writer's strike. You know, I love my medical dramas. They're supposed to be coming back next month, but everything's delayed. So hopefully they figure it out before
next month. It's really impacted the industry crazy. Like, you know, actors are showing their residual checks of like getting nothing. Billy Porter had to sell his house.
He had to sell his house. And I believe him. He was like, I think I'm rich because I would have an Emmy, but like, I'm not. Like, so give people their money. What is first on your weekly grab?
You know, it's like a renovation show. So the new one I found on Hulu is called Remix My RV. It is with a woman named Janet. She is the business partner, a big boy of Outkast. She actually used to be she started as like his assistant, moved up to become his manager. And now she's his business partner because they started Celebrity Trailers. It started as like where she was kind of just renovating celebrity trailers at like, you know, movie sets, video sets or whatever. But it really expanded, especially with the tiny house movement, people moving into mobile homes. And so she pretty much just glams out RVs to the liking of her clients. But you also see how Big Boy adds in his spin. Like she'll be doing like a design and he'll come in and like, I think we should add like little stars to the wall. And it's not crazy. But when they do it, I'm like, wow, that actually looks great. So do you see that Big Boy has his little, he actually got some interior design skills. She said Ludacris helped her spark the idea to start the company because she had renovated his RV. And he was like, yo, you got a business here. So shout out to Ludacris too, because he's just amazing.
Such a businessman.
So, and he really is for the community. I was even just writing about him donating towards the Cincinnati like children's theater or something like that. So he's just just a great guy. He'd be doing stuff on the low, just, you know, like he has kids shows and he's Ludacris. Like, it's like, what do you, you know, I've loved Ludacris since high school. Remember I told him that at TRL when I was like 16,
she
little
did.
Fat, little fast ass. It's like, sit, little girl, sit down. Little girl, please. So check out Remix My RV if you're into home renovation shows. It's on Hulu. Yes. What you got?
My next one is Down for Love on Netflix. I love any like dating romantic shows, mm-hmm. but I specifically like to learn about people with different abilities trying to get love, because I tell people all the time, like, it doesn't matter who you are. Love is hard. Relationships are hard. And I specifically like to watch people who have like different abilities try to navigate it. So this is based in New Zealand. They pick young people with Down syndrome and they've never had girlfriends or boyfriends or been in relationships, and they go to professional for love. So one thing you realize is it doesn't matter where you are, who you from, like where you're from, like everyone wants love. Everybody wants that natural emotion to be loved and feel love. And you see these sweet, my favorite is Josh. He's 21. He has the best personality. And he's like, mom, I just want to fall in love. So they go on different dates. They're set up by blind dates, specifically by an association for people with Down syndrome. So they all go on different blind dates with people who also have like some type of mental or, learning disability, so they're just not alone. And when I say it, just touches my little heart. It's only 6 episodes on Netflix. But my favorite is Carlos. What other 30-year-old man you know speaks English, French, Portuguese, and Spanish, is a professional photographer happens to have Down syndrome. He's from Bolivia, but he lives in New Zealand. He goes on his first date and they're a perfect match. She has a learning disability. They like fall in love. He's sending her poems. And it's just so beautiful to see like these people that the world discounts fall right. in love and love each other. You have this other young couple who they're horny. They're 21. They want to have sex. So only thing that they don't know anything about sex, but they're like talking about, I can't wait to have sex. But then they go to like a professional who tells them like, what do you think sex is? And one of the guys was like, I think it's when you love someone. And she's like, no, let's talk about sex. Because, you know, of course, we never talk to our parents about wanting to have sex or having sex. So they get a professional who tells them, you're 21, 22. You're feeling this. You want to have sex. So I just love the education it gives me. But it also teaches people that love is hard. It doesn't matter who you are, where you're from. I'm rooting for all the couples. One girl realized that she was fluid and wanted to date with a girl because she was like, I just don't want to date men. I kind of want to date women. And it's just beautiful because sometimes they don't like each other. One guy was like, I think she's a great friend. Don't want to date her. So it's just, but they don't have a, what's the word? They don't care. If they like you, they're like, I like you.
Right.
They
like no, there's no filter because there's no not really a
filter. Their minds
very direct.
They're very,
very like black and white. Like it's this or it's that.
Like it'd be the second date. You want to be my girlfriend? You want to be my boyfriend? Like they're very direct, very upfront. But it's a beautiful show about love. But also they go through unrequited love. They go through challenges. They go through like sexual awakening. So I think if you just want to watch something that's lighthearted, not stressful,
yes.
Down for Love on Netflix.
That sounds sweet. What do you think about Tiffany Haddish doing a dating show with homeless people?
I didn't hear about that, but that sounds interesting.
Working
as long
on,
as she's not exploiting them.
That's what people are saying. As long as it's not exploitation, because you know, because she was once homeless, so she wants to show like basically like what even what this show might is showing, like homeless people.
Like need different aspects. I love learning new things. So maybe there's a different challenge because they maybe don't have ways to contact each other. But please don't exploit them. The thing about this show, they're not being exploited.
Right.
They work in connection with the Down Syndrome Center in New Zealand. So everything's like watch. They make sure it's appropriate. So I think it can work as long as she's not being mean, evil, and spiteful and kind of mocking the homelessness, unless you're gonna give them some help.
I don't think she would. I would hope that she doesn't. But
When is that coming out? Do you know?
she says she's working on it. So probably next year. Probably next year.
It's still in development.
Yeah,
What's
still
next
in.
on your weekly?
Next on what's on my weekly grab is a short 6-episode show as well. It is on Max, HBO Max, which I why would they? First of all, what happened to Cinemax? Okay.
HBO bought them.
Oh, so now it's.
HBO and Cinemax supposed to be HBO Max, but now Discovery, all of them. So now it's just Max.
So stupid.
So stupid.
Late Night Lockup is a show basically like Cops. It shows the crazy encounters police have with people. Most of them are under the influence, but it's all late at night. They are in very rural towns, Iowa, West Virginia, Wisconsin. People, you will, there's, they do three arrests an episode.
Oh my God, I'm gonna watch it as soon as we're
There
done.
won't be one that doesn't make you crack up laughing. Like they were like, you were going, they was like, your blood alcohol level is twice the legal limit. He was like, twice the legal minutes. Like, it's just one guy was like in the interrogation, like in the arrest room, but they were watching him on the camera. He was just pulling down his pants, smacking his ass at them, farting.
Drunk.
They had to come restrain him. He's farting during the arrest.
Okay.
Another guy ran his car into the police precinct. When the cop comes out, he says, I did this on purpose because you arrested my son and you charged him with selling some drug, like selling marijuana, even though this drug is more serious than that, whatever, let's say heroin. And he gets arrested, goes into the interrogation room. The woman cop comes in and she goes, so I hear you ran your car into the precinct to protest your son's arrest for marijuana. He's like, no, he was arrested for no, not for marijuana. For he was arrested for selling marijuana. She's like, no, actually, he was arrested for selling heroin, and that's why he got arrested. Now all of a sudden, the guy's like, oh, well, I didn't run my car into the precinct. Like, you know, it's a new car. Like, shut your, it's
So he
that.
admitted it and just said, no, I take it back.
Yes, like then there's like drunk women. It's just like everyone is funny. And what I will say, no one's black, everyone is white.
We're gonna
So it
watch.
kind of helps break stigmas of the type of people who are difficult with police, the type of people that make police jobs difficult, the type of people that are getting arrested. All of those stigmas are broken because from watching the show, I'm just like, white people are crazy. But they're funny.
I am adding that on my
Hilarious.
list
Please
ASAP.
watch it. Please watch it with your assistant. Y'all will love it. Actually, if you watch it when we're done with this, y'all will be, I'm telling you, y'all gonna be.
As we eat dinner, I'm gonna watch it. Is
I'm
it
telling.
only 6 episodes or it comes out every week?
It's only 6 episodes so far. Hopefully that you know they it was just the season one was airing in like June. So it's a new show. I do think it'll get picked up for another season. It's not like it's not even it's a reality show, but not even it's all based on like police body cam footage and surveillance footage. So it's not like it sh is in impacted by the writer strike or actor strike or anything, because this is real stuff happening to our police officers who work very hard down here.
But they deserve it. They deserve to
Not
see all
all
the
of them, not
shenanigans.
all of not every police officer.
Needs to be farted
Right. These officers in the show are you could tell they're like good Samaritans, and they the ones getting the shit end of the stick. But they're also, like I said, it's these are arrests happening in small towns, so these probably aren't even the officers we don't like, right? Because
They're
they're
probably small town show, and it's probably just small crimes, not anything
small,
big.
yeah, very small petty crimes. You're not seeing nothing serious. No, you know, really real. It's pretty lighthearted, honestly. So it helps even build support for police officers. And like I said, it breaks stigmas around who's out here really being difficult with police officers, because it's not just black people.
Oh Lord,
check it out. Late night lockout, late night lockup on Max.
Not HBO Max, Max.
That's Cinemax.
Max.
That's such a stupid name.
They're just all consolidating and trying to get money together.
I'm over it. Now they all look like the Sacklers to me. Everyone, I don't care. Any white conglomerate is the Sacklers.
What Sackler ass mother?
Sackler ass organization. What's next on your weekly grab?
Last on my weekly grab was a random watch this morning that helped me take on my faux locks, which I probably never do again because it was horrible. And I don't know what made me watch it, but it was on Max and it popped up. It's Kim and Kanye, the divorce. I'm not a big fan of either, but something was like, you know what?
Just what watch something?
It. Something was like, something. I needed something quick to get me through. Right. It was like, watch it. And it's only two episodes. Episode one is purely from like Kanye's POV, and episode two is purely from Kim's POV, which I love that they did that. Because I personally walked away not liking either one of them more or less, but also understanding both of them a little more, but still I don't give a damn because they're both richer than me. So episode one, it kind of helps you sympathize like 20% with Kanye because one, he had a broken home. He lost his mom, which was like the beginning of his mental breakdown. As he was showing these like psychotic breaks, a lot of people were like, instead of his wife kind of cutting the cameras off, like saying, I don't want to film my show. My husband, the father of my four kids, needs me. She kind of like made money and like fame off of that. And I think that's fucked up. I think when your partner is being honest about their mental health and maybe is not being honest, like that's when you need to say, forget the fame, forget everything. I need to be there for my family. But they show a video of Kim. One thing that even her deceased dad said, Kim's going to be the one that's going to chase fame. Kim just wants to be famous. That's it. That's all she's always wanted to do. And so they show you that this man needed his family, he needed his wife. He needed some type of family structure. He didn't have a mom. He didn't really have a relationship with his dad. And when he was doing all this crazy shit, he needed her to own in. And then it gave me a different insight into the SNL episode, which kind of broke the camel's back on their relationship. Kanye was in the audience. He didn't know her monologue. And they made her tell a joke about their divorce. Mm-hmm. And that made him take another break, psychotic and break, left early. And then she keep and then started dating him.
Literally.
So to him,
shortly after that,
it's like, I only left early. He left after the monologue because the joke was like, I'm dating a genius. He's a fashion guy. He's good at music. But now after all he's done, you can see that I'm really for him, for his personality. Like, it was just a fucked up joke. And he left. So then to know that, like, he was still trying to make it work at that point, and they were kind of talking. Because that was right after she appeared at the Donda concert in a wedding dress. So she was kind of listening to him. She left. I mean, he left because he was pissed. And then not only did she stay in film with Pete, but then they started dating. It doesn't excuse what he did, but what it says was Kim was never humble enough to make it about her husband and the father of her kids needing support because it fucked with her brand. And because it was all about her brand, she was never there for him. But then episode two, you know, you see this girl who has always been like a really... I've never heard Kim Kardashian is a mean person. Right. Yes, she wants to be famous, but I've always heard she's a nice person to approach.
Right.
But you see her star, she wants to be famous, she wants to be aligned, and just the control and manipulation that Kanye had over her.
Right.
She couldn't wear what she wanted to wear. They brought us back to the episode where he literally came to our house and was like, you got to throw all of this out. And she's crying because a lot of it is emotional. She wore stuff with her dad. He's like, yeah. I don't care. It's ugly. And then you see how he love bombed her when they, after SNL, it didn't work out. She was dating Pete, but he wanted her back. You see how toxic and negative his love bombing is.
Right.
How like messed up it was that he didn't want to necessarily be with her, but he didn't want her to leave her. So I just thought it taught me, one, both of them are really not, I don't really care about either one of them. But toxic two,
AF.
Toxic as hell, the both of them. But two, I think both of them showed signs that it wouldn't work. And they both ignored those signs. Yeah. And I think neither one of them did anything that they needed to do to make it work. But I honestly feel really bad for those four kids. they're going to have to see everything their parents did eventually. The internet lasts forever. And I just thought it was interesting that...
Sit here and act like whatever kids Kim had wasn't already going to have it bad, whatever they was going to grow up and see with the stuff she did.
She did. When you add and both of them...
We granted, Kanye, when you were saying he needed his wife, he needed a Black woman mm-hmm. who was going to tell him to shut the hell up. Okay,
have that at all.
Oftentimes too, when you're dealing with someone with these different things, you know, I have family members with diagnoses, and it's a stern type of love sometimes where it can kind of break through with them. And you saw in the Yeezus documentary, that's what his mother was. Mm-hmm. So he made the mistake of choosing to leave your ass for a white girl after the Delta girl he was dating early on in his career. Every girl after that, he pretty much kind of just went with like industry girls who wanted to get famous. You knew Kim was going after you with the fame. You knew it. So I can't really feel sorry for him with that. And then when it came to Kim, the signs were there years, probably years before they even had the kids, but she was milking that. She knew she wanted to have his children. All four of them. She wanted West children. She wanted them to be Kanye's kids because she could have had kids with any of her other last three ex-Black husbands. Sure. Okay. She wanted to have Kanye's children. She milked all of that. He not only gave her four children and fame, he gave her a $1 billion clothing company, told Nicki Minaj no, told a Black woman no, and made a already rich white girl even richer with your concept, because Skims is basically Yeezy season for women. Mm-hmm. That's how it even started. So she milked your ass. And honestly, and I will give Kim credit, because I do think that she was willing to try to make it work with him.
She was.
Like, it had already been an agreement, just like a more of a business agreement in the final years of the last, after they had like the first kid, after they had North, there was already just a shift happening. Kanye started going off the rails, but she was still riding with him. Why? Not because of the love to me. It was for the brand. She didn't want to have another divorce under her name. She knows Kanye is still going to be powerful. It doesn't matter how big a scandal is that he causes. He's still going to be Kanye. And mm-hmm. she still wanted that access. And so that's why she even stayed with him, because the longer she stayed with him, she was still positioning herself to where she is now. Now she got the deals with Balenciaga. She built Skims up, because nobody was respecting Skims at first.
I'm still not giving either one of them a dime of my money or my pocket, but I think it was interesting to learn about
either one of them.
Celebrity divorces, a lot of money, it's a lot of time. Listen, I didn't know, but this was the longest one. Both of hers was like a year or 6 months or less. It was not billions invested. I just walked away thinking I could see how everyone hates slash loves either or. I don't think any person is better or worse, but I think Kanye needed a real Black woman. I agree with you, like behind him. If Donda, I feel like if his mother was alive, 90% of the things he'd done would not be relevant. And they also talk about the guilt he carried. That, like, ever since his mom passed, like, he was never going to be the same, because had he not given her the money for that surgery, she would still be alive. Right. And they were like, that's going to affect him forever. And then also for Kim, I think once they said she became a mom, yes, she cares about fame and fortune, but if it came to that or her kids, I've always said she's a great mom. But if you just, it was a good watch for learning, but I didn't walk away liking.
You don't care about now, other than her kids, it's always going to be the fame. It's not Kanye's mental health. It's not her sisters. It's not the mom. It's always Kim's brand.
She's a fame whore. And I don't think she would have any problem with us saying that. She loves being famous.
She like kind of says it herself on her show.
Yeah. So I never watch it. Never will.
Never watched one episode. But everything you talked about, I knew because I wrote about it. But even when I was writing for reality television, they're easy to write about. You don't have to watch the show. The business is all on social media. The clips mm-hmm. get shared. I've never watched one episode of Keeping Up with the Kardashians or the Kardashians, but writing about it made me a lot of money. So thank you, Kim.
Never bought any of their products. But if you want to watch and you're into that stuff, no shade. I think it'll be a good watch. Just to get both. I just like that they only did two episodes.
Right.
The first solely on like Kanye's POV and his camp, and the second on Kim. And so you could see both, but they still, it don't matter. They ain't paying my bills. What's last on your
week? I will not watch it. So I wanted to do a special shout out to a documentary I watched on Max called The Stroll. It is about, it's pretty much trans awareness and liberation. Produced by Carlos King. Shout out to Carlos King. It brought tears to my eyes. So pretty much it is about the history of The Stroll in New York City, 14th Street, where you would know that's where you could go pick up fun time.
The girls.
And they'd shown you the history of how it had been, you know, The Stroll was known to be The Stroll from the 60s, 70s, 80s on. Then as gentrification came, you know, they kind of wiped it out. But at the same time, there still needs to be protection for these sex workers, where half of these authority figures that, you know, are creating these laws are also after hours going to go get some love from these girls on The Stroll. So it really just kind of even talks about even how these trans women were pioneers in just the fights for LGBTQ plus rights. And always often overlooked, because not only are they Black, but they're trans. So when injustices happen to them, it just goes overlooked and ignored. Then a white gay boy gets murdered, and now it's like, oh, then it's like this whole fight for liberation, where it was like a Black trans woman was just murdered a few days before that white boy. So you're kind of just even seeing the history of that, how they were ignored and forgotten. But how they continue to fight to this day, the legacy they created, like some of these women that have been advocates since the 80s, they are now helping fighting for gay rights today, helping with getting housing for the youth. And you know, and it's ties into the current fight for gay LGBTQ plus liberation. So, you know, it was just really inspiring to watch. There was something that had like stood out to me was, you're seeing each of them tell their stories, but the one that ends up being, she's the mother of the house of like, one of the ballroom.
Balenciaga. I think she's like
one of the ballroom houses. It's like, wow, you know, like I said, it's like their legacy really kind of carried on beyond just being what people would call like sex workers. So yeah, it's just really inspiring. Shout out to them.
I watched it a couple weeks ago, and what really got to my heart was the fact that one of the interviewees was like, I wanted a regular job. But when I showed up like me, right, and my ID said another name, they would immediately turn me down. How am I supposed to live? And so it humanized like people who do sex work, unless God forbid, or they're like forced, they don't want to. These trans women don't want to be on the street selling their bodies, but that was the only way they could make a living. They couldn't go to Bloomingdale's or McDonald's and get a job, because back then in the 80s and 90s, there was no such thing as a sex change or like being clear about who you are. So it made me empathize. Like, imagine if that's like being a Black woman, like, right. Oh, I want a job, but you're a Black woman. Like, how could you make a living for yourself? So
right.
It's such a great watch. I loved it.
So definitely such a great watch, inspiring. And then last on my weekly grab, also on Max, I've been watching a lot of Max,
as you can tell,
Project Greenlight. Issa Rae show, where it starts off a little like a director competition where they are finding an upcoming film director, and they give them this chance of a lifetime to direct a film that is going to be an actual movie that is on Max right now. Once I finish the show, then I'm going to watch the movie that a Black woman got selected to be the director of this film. But you're really seeing the ins and outs, all the behind the scenes of how movies are made, and with somebody who is new to the game. So it's just really cool, especially now with the writers, the hot actor strike, the coolest part so far to me has been the auditions, like seeing the reads for, like, these are real actors they got. Like, you're going to recognize some of the actors that are trying out for these parts. And it's like, oh, baby, you an actress, honey. Like, you can act. Like, the way they just turn it on to read the line, it's like, wow, like, that's real talent. Like, I'm not even going to sleep on that. And then just seeing Issa really be very hands-on with the project, but she's out in Europe shooting Barbie movie. Like, just seeing Issa be Issa is always dope because she really is such a down-to-earth person. Like, no matter how far she gets, like, you talk to her, she talks to you like a regular person, not like you're beneath her.
Okay, real quick, if you had a project, what would you green light? What would your movie be about?
Me?
Yes.
I have a movie. I have tons of movie ideas. I don't want
to. Green light season 2. Jerazlyn's coming for you.
I don't want to tell my ideas because they will come to fruition one day.
All right, Issa Rae, get your phone. She's going to call you. Your Capricorn sister.
It's okay. I'm a December Capricorn. She a January Capricorn, but we got to get it popping. But yeah, so check out Project Greenlight if you are into the movie making business. If you are interested to find out how movies are made, watch Project Greenlight. And probably try out because you never know. It could be your chance. It could be your chance. So now, enough of the good stuff. It's time for the dragon. Let's get into our piss poor performance.
With a dance move.
Okay, not do that too hard.
Listen, my piss poor is going to go to Broketel, a.k.a. Martell.
Okay, because I was like, who is Broketel?
Love and Marriage Huntsville / the fake storyline of Real Housewives of Atlanta.
Sure enough, it's
so it's his girlfriend, and I'm glad we're on video so people can see my quotation. It's his girlfriend's birthday. I think he helped her kind of plan it. And he sent Cash App requests to her friend.
Cash App.
First of all, you don't got Zelle. You don't got Venmo. Anyway.
And by the way, this wasn't aired on the show. This was on the after show, right? It became a conversation. And that's what is bothering me about, like, producers with missing the damn mark in these
houses. Well, Kenya brought it up. It was a because Candy brought up the fact that Sheree didn't invite her. And then Kenya basically told Candy and Shamia, like, oh no, he requested us. He didn't pay. Like, he just made it seem like it was his dinner he was giving her, but then was like, where your money? Like, you're not helping me pay for. First of all,
it should have just been an intimate dinner then. Why tell her to invite her friends?
And it's noble. Noble is not cheap. Okay.
And not even that. Like, okay, let's say you were going to do that and even foot the bill. Don't do it at Nobu. Do it at, there's other restaurants. You could have got a, you're in Atlanta, sir.
Hello.
Black owned restaurant. Way cheaper. They could have gave you a private room.
First of all, fucking Candy owned 3. Why the hell you didn't say give Sheree a room?
Right.
I'm going to help you pay for it, but.
And it probably would have been way less. You probably could have just threw her a little light G. She would have been like, oh, that's fine. All of that would have been taken care of. You could have did it on camera. You would have looked good. Like, but you dumb.
But I'm mad at him and Sheree. I'm mad at Sheree for making us believe that, like, he really bought her a $3,000 Alexander McQueen bag. If he's complaining about a $1,500 bill, he does not have $3,000 to buy you anything. Second of all, he has 5 kids. They're all under 10. That man has no money. Third of all, just stop trying to make fetch happen. We know you got, and then she was talking about, oh, he lives far. We're just having fun. Sis. You're not together. It's okay. Stop trying to make it happen.
She sounded so dumb trying to defend her ain't shit ass relationships, whether it's Broketel, Tyrone, Bob, the one that Nene was like, don't I know you from somewhere? That was my favorite.
I love her confessionals because she has good one-liners, but in terms of her storyline, nobody believes that you and Martell are happy and committed and having sex. Nobody believes that. Okay. But I'm just giving him my piss poor because
he having sex with somebody, but it ain't you.
Not Sheree. Just say you broke, sir. It's okay. Money doesn't fall on trees for everyone.
And Sheree, just say you had a facelift. But the way your face just changed from season premiere.
No, from episode 1 to episode 15. Not even see. From episode 1 to episode 15.
Her face it's giving Cardi B. And they all got to chill, because when you start to do too much, they all got the same face. At this point, Cardi B, Sheree, Erica Maynard, they all kind of look alike.
Erica Maynard brown now. She black now.
Now she's brown skin and looks like Brandi Norwood. It's just like, it's giving like, come up off whatever's happening, just a little filler.
Just stop. Black don't crack. Just let it age gracefully. But yeah, I just think he's broke, and he's going to be on next week's episode, basically.
Oh yeah.
Playing his quote unquote part of Sheree's storyline partner. So that's my piss poor. Who's yours?
I mean, I will say that Roa is starting to pick it up towards the end of the season, but I'm very invested in Drew and Ralph. That even that whole little encounter of the hug, like, that just spoke volumes.
Way he hugged everybody.
But she did it first.
He did it first. They're just very disconnected.
Yes.
Even their quote unquote date night and his reasoning for not wanting to do therapy because you got to talk about stuff. What the fuck is therapy?
Like, everything is just like, all the signs were there. It's just, I do feel bad for her, because you can tell she's like a really sweet girl. And to me, it's just like, damn, for you to be Drew Sidora, like, have been famous for like 20 years, working actress, and then you marry some dude nobody knows about, and then just kind of let him play you, like,
embarrass you on national TV, because he's fucking embarrassing. Like,
yes, but my piss poor is not Ralph Pittman. It is actually Tyler Krieger. He is the stepson on Painkiller, the new short limited edition series on Netflix about the Sacklers. Now, we already know the Sacklers ain't shit. They're white drug dealers that got away with it while black people still continue to rot in prison for less minor crimes that didn't cause opioid crises across demographics across the globe. Mm. We already know the Sacklers ain't shit. But let's talk about that son. Okay? Episode 1. Okay? It starts off, you see this man, he got a family business. He's with his wife. They got a child together. Son not even his. He's still treating him like he's raising him like that's his son.
Gave him a job
at his car company.
Tire business, yeah.
Car renovation job place in West Virginia.
Yeah.
And the son is playing around in the tractor, and he's like, yo, get out. Just get out. You're playing too much. Get out. And he's like, no, I got it. He's like, no, get out. He gets up on the tractor to try to get him off the tractor, and the son's playing around so much, he ends up falling. Something jams him in the back. That's how he gets the injury. That injury leads him to the doctor, who prescribes him OxyContin. I always thought it was
OxyContin. No, I've been saying OxyContin, but I was Quentin.
He always say OxyContin. It's OxyContin. And even once he's on the OxyContin, Tyler Krieger's ass is still in the pills, selling it to his friends, then catches his stepdad getting addicted to the pills that he's only on because you injured him. And who the first one to go drop a dime? Tyler, motherfucker, Tiger. Then it wasn't until then. Now the mother want to tell him about herself. You're the reason he's injured. Whoop his ass, ma'am. That's the way, his reason why your son is all spoiled out here selling OxyContin to begin with. You spare the rod, spoil the child, ma'am. Whoop his ass. He's the real villain. We already know the Sacklers ain't shit. The real villain is Tyler Krieger as it relates to Glenn. First of all, though, you know, all jokes aside, such an amazing show.
So
everybody
good.
Everybody did phenomenal. There wasn't one weak performance. It invokes so much emotion out of you because these are actors, okay? Mm-hmm. Really put together such a good to shed light on. This is real stories here. They fabricate some of it for the show, but the start of each episode, I'm holding back tears.
I was gonna say, that's my favorite part, that they, instead of having like a blog about this is not real, they had real parents of real children who have died from their opioid addiction, who did not start using drugs, were not, I think they normalized it. Like, these weren't people on crack or coke. They took drugs for pain that were not healthy and that killed them. I just want to give a mini piss poor to whoever did the fucking casting of that little girl, because not once did she grow older than four. They went to 5 years
or did, right. That little girl's still a toddler. Like, oh, man. That little girl is not still a toddler at this point now.
She's 6'7" now. They show
you all sides. Like, of course, as a Black person, you're watching this like, well, these are the real drug dealers. And then you finally see they were building up, showing you how Edie Flowers, Uzo Aduba, who, Emmy.
Better get her Oscar. Better get her Emmy now.
All of them. And I think his name is Tim Robbins. Whoever played Glenn. Give them their Emmys now.
Even Matthew Broderick, who I love, I hated him. He played Richard.
There's Bueller. Like, yes, like he really, like, but all of them, like, amazing performances. You're kind of seeing her investment in this fight against the opioid crisis, and they're kind of building it up. And then when she kind of tells the district attorney of West Virginia, look, my brother's in prison for selling crack, my mother basically turned into a vegetable from becoming addicted to crack, and this is the crack epidemic all over again. Only
he's in jail forever, and y'all motherfuckers is walking free, making billions of dollars,
having sales conferences in Miami once a year. Got your white salespeople, Oxy. Your salespeople is addicted to Oxy. People in the company is addicted to Oxy. And so now you're also able to see when it comes time for election and it's the big pharma is a part of all the debates. This is the big pharma they're talking about. It's not just a hot point. Like, this is real. And the thing with the opioid crisis is it affected everyone.
Everybody.
The crack. We ain't gonna get into how it got into our communities, but primarily it was impacting our communities, the Black communities, and white people were doing cocaine. But opioids, everybody is able to get their hands on opioids because the doctors are giving it out. Mm-hmm. And it's so deep rooted. You're seeing the salespeople, how they're recruiting people fresh out of college. These kids just want a job, a well-paying job.
They want money.
They need money. So they're easy targets. And then they're believing that they're selling something that's really helping people. You're finding out that they get higher incentives on their sales by the doctor, by telling, encouraging the doctors to increase the dosage, which by increasing the dosage is just making them more addicted. You're seeing that Purdue Pharma.
They knew
it was addictive. They knew everything. And just in the end, because this is a true story, the only thing that's happening to them is they just have to deal with lawsuits.
And money that they have.
No jail time. Why? Because of Rudy Giuliani, who helped them get off. Donald Trump, who helped them get
Curtis, the FDA guy, who went from not approving them to working from them. The congressman in Maine, who went from paying attention to them to working from them. Money is the root of all evil.
They bought everyone out. I am hoping that this show, nothing's going to change. They're not going to have to do any jail time.
Mm-hmm. They should, but they have because
they're rich and white. It just is what it is. But imagine if Franklin Saint got to get to the level where he could have an annual sales conference in Miami.
He would not be in jail.
You see, go now. Watch Painkiller, and now just go watch the season. Watch episode one of season five when he was really at the height of his game, and then just watch the season finale of the show. And you will see how his fate ended. Granted, that was fictionalized. The real Franklin Saint is Rick Ross, the real Rick Ross, not the rapper. And he did hard time. Like, he was in prison for like 20 years. And now he just lays low, and a fat rapper out of Miami stole his name and got away with it. So there was no winning. There was no winners in the crack epidemic. These were Black men that were victimized. And then if you watch Snowfall, you see where they got the drugs from. We didn't create it ourselves, okay? The American government was working to put this in our communities and bring us down. And that shit dates back to corrupt-ass Edgar Hoover. Fuck him, too. I'm on his grave.
Okay. I think a big thing for me was realizing like the Nobel Peace Prize, the Rockefeller, all these white names, like monuments, criminals. Centers, they were horrible people that had money. It was like, give me Rockefeller Center. But Rockefeller was I never knew the history of the Nobel Peace Prize. Like the guy who created it, created dynamite and killed people. It's like, oh, wow. Mind blown. But
it's just amazing how you can erase all your crimes and bad behavior when you're rich and white. Because I know money talks, but it's just like, it's hard to see that if you're rich and black. Are rich and Asian.
Then if you're questioning the money, if you're rich and black, if you're rich and white, you get away with it because of all the people you make it happen. And that to me is the biggest thing I've learned. Because when Edie or Uzo, when she showed like the graph of the crack epidemic and then the graph of the opioid epidemic, and she was like, this is the same thing. And I was like,
yep.
Wow.
Yep. Everybody has to watch that show. A lot of people are already talking about it. It just came on Netflix like Friday. So
yeah, it's everybody. I think the number one show or top three for sure.
Yeah, it's such a good show. Please watch it. Maybe the more people watch it and talk about it, maybe it could turn into something. I don't know, but
I think it will.
At least creating the awareness helps.
I think.
So that was like, that went from our piss poor into the deep dive. So that was it. So now let's just get into our yes. Where we big up some people, big them up, big them up, big them up. Who you got, Bessie?
Well, yeah, I know I love my cooking shows, especially my summer cooking show. This past MasterChef season, we're doing United Taste of America. Okay. So they have cooks from different coasts in America. So my yes goes to Colby. He is a Black Southern boy from New Orleans. He won this past week's like big challenge where they all had to make a famous cake or like fruit dessert from a different country. He made like a pancake. Apple stack cake. It was like apples and pancakes, but it had to stay up like a cake. He's the first Black winner of like the season, so I love that. But his 93-year-old grandfather taught him how to cook. And when he got his like apron, his 93-year-old grandfather was there. He walked him back. Gordon Ramsay was just like, I don't know what you taught him, but he's a really good cook. He's an old guy. He's like, I know that my man, that my man, that my grandson. The sweetest, oldest, cutest little short 92-year-old guy, but he's a Southern cook. He loves his family. And I'm just happy that I just like that there's a lot of Black cooks. There's a lot of different cuisine. And I'm just rooting for everybody Black. So Colby, you deserve that win. Who's doing your yes?
I'm rooting for everybody Black. I'm rooting for Erica Dixon. Okay. The return of the Erica the Dixon,
yes,
on Love & Hip Hop Atlanta. She's been off the show for some seasons, you know, just living her life. She had twins. After she left Scrappy, she was like, I'm done with this. But she had to come set Bambi's ass straight. You're also kind of just seeing like Bambi just has a bad attitude.
Something in her energy just is bad. I don't believe anything she says at all. It's just she's mad, negative, mad, ugh. Ugh, miserable. She gives misery. She gives misery. And misery loves company. Erica, aka her best friend Erica Mena. Misery loves company, and yeah, them two love. Yeah,
what Sierra too?
Ugh,
like, they just giving bitter Betty's this season. But my yes goes to Erica Dixon for calling Bambi out because they were trying to have a conversation. Because at the end of the day, their kids are siblings, and you can see that Bambi went into it with a bad attitude because she's like, ma'am, your daughter is 18. What do we have to talk about? It don't matter if her daughter's 27 years old. She's still related to your kids that are not 18. So if it would make sense that the mothers are able to be on one accord so the kids are able to come together, that's still her child. That's still your ex-husband's child, and that's still your two kids' older sister. So yeah, y'all should talk, especially if their sister is only coming over when you're not home. That's a sign of some problems going on. And then once it got there, it's like Bambi loves to throw in her face, like, oh, you're mad about my ex-husband because, you know, Scrappy actually married her. But we all saw the show. We saw that Scrappy proposed to Erica first.
Hello.
She turned down the proposal. And then when Bambi came over to his house on a bicycle, they started dating. And that was, he just moved on with Bambi. But even when he was moving on with Bambi, he was still even kind of trying to get Erica back. It's all on the show, honey. It's like all of it is on the footage. And Erica Dixon is always about that life. So when Bambi was like, what you want to do? You want to square up? She's like, oh, Erica was ready. Okay.
You could give me Erica back and make Bambi a friend of. You could give me Erica back.
Oh, please.
Erica Dixon. Erica Manica could go too.
Erica may not get over Safari. Because now at this point, Erica may not can move to a friend. You could just be a friend that talks about Safari now with Amara La Negra, who's going to be the next baby mama. See, Erica be a friend too, all three of them. Because it's like all of y'all doing right now is just being bitter and talking about all the men on the show. And all of you don't have a man right now for your own reasons. And it's just, it's giving very much bitter. It's called Love and Hip Hop, ladies. Okay.
Okay.
But yes, shout out to Erica Dixon. The face card never declines.
Bad ass mother.
Gorgeous. She's just gorgeous. Like, she's the one person, like, when she's on my screen, I'm just like looking at her cheekbones. I'm looking at her lips.
Natural. You can tell that's just God. That's just God and good skincare.
A beautiful, beautiful, beautiful Black woman. So shout out to them. Shout out to her. And now let's get into our positivity.
We love positive energy and ending on a good note. I'm going to go with my favorite Bible verse.
Oh, Jesus.
Guard your heart above all else, for it determines the course of your life. It's my tattoo, Proverbs 4, verse 23. I think it's important for people to just guard your heart. Your heart is important. Remember what you think and who you let in. Mm-hmm. So remember that. Don't know the Bible, but I know that verse.
That's right. She knows that one. She tattooed it, so she won't
forget. My favorite one. What is your
mine is a quote that says, start getting into a mindset where you expect something unexpected to happen, like a sudden shift, an out of the blue miracle, a possibility of an instant breakthrough. Let yourself loosen up about how things will happen. Trust more, believe more, be open to receiving.
Ooh, I'm taking that in this new year of minds. I trust you. Trust you.
As you go into this new year, because everybody, today's birthday is coming up. Birthday girl. Boop, 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 boop,
boop, boop, boop, boop. Leo season's the best season.
So thank you guys for sticking with us through season two as we, we've had some little breaks in between, but we got through season two.
The summer is summering, y'all. I hope y'all enjoy it.
The summering. Honestly, this has been one of the best summers ever. I've been doing so much travel and just seeing which it just helps expand your mindset and recenters your focus. So that's always a good thing. And we're going to likely have a special episode in between our break, because we're going on a little break and we'll be back for the fall. Because, me and Tanea are about to travel to London and Europe and Paris. Nice. In Amsterdam. Tanea's going to Amsterdam. I'm not going to Amsterdam, but I'll join her.
So, going to be the best. So you guys may see us. You may not. So
you may see us. Yeah. If we can not get too drunk to forget to record our podcast, our special edition podcast episode in Europe, that is the plan. We are trying to record a special edition podcast episode. So hopefully.
Hold us to it.
Don't hold us to it, because we have... first of all, we never even did a photo shoot for our podcast. It took us a year to decide.
Like, oh my gosh, we're going to do it there.
Cartoons.
We're going to do it there. Done.
We will see. Okay. But all right, guys. And on that note, we'll leave you with our slogan, Tanea Ross.
Love, abundance, and these beautiful hair bundles.
Yes. That density is densing.
150, bitch.
Come on. All right. We'll be back for season 3.
Can't believe it, y'all.
Bye.